Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Al Diaz, author of The Titus Conflict, producer of the film Beyond Hope and Transformational Guide. And I also have my wonderful co-host, Cindy Holbrook, who is the Compassionate Divorce Coach of CoachingForDivorceWomen.com. Today, our topic is codependent, three steps you can take now. First, a couple of announcements. Continue to check back here on Blog Talk Radio on the Rewrite Your Story host page for upcoming shows and co-hosts. Also, go to RewriteStory.com for a very special gift that we're giving away.
Al, I just can't stand it if you're sad. What can I do to make you happy? I know that I have to be able to do something to make you happy because I just can't stand it. I know that you're sad because of me. I know that there's something that I did to make you sad. Please tell me what I did to make you sad because I will do anything to make you happy.
Wow. You know what I would say to that is I would say, I feel like I'm walking on eggshells. I have to be careful with what I say or do around you. I feel like I'm scared to say anything because it might upset you, or I'm concerned that I might do something that's going to upset you. You always seem to be very upset with me.
I'm not upset with you. I feel like you're angry at me, and I know. I mean, it's my job to make you happy, and you should have everything, and I just love you so much, and I, you know, I live for you. I mean, you're my life. There's no way I could live without you, and I know that it's my responsibility to keep you happy.
Wow, Cindy. You know, and it's funny. Okay, so obviously for the audience, we're doing a little spill here, but everything is just indicating right now. I've heard it before from my clients. And
mm-hmm.
you're tapping right into it, girl. I mean, right into it.
And right, and I really wanted to show this because even if you're not verbalizing that the way that I just did in our scenario, if you're having these thoughts, you're in a codependent relationship. And last week, our guest, Tracy Lee, her definition of codependency is you can tell if you're involved in a codependent relationship if your emotional health and well-being depends on someone else's perception of how they view you. And Al and I wanted to continue this because we did get some questions and emails about, well, okay, I know I'm in a codependent relationship, but how in the hell do I get out of it? So that's why we decided today's topic was continued with, we're going to give you three steps to get out of the codependent relationship. And if you're listening on the Blog Talk Radio, you can hop over to facebook.com/yourtoxicrelationshipdance, and you can ask us questions and communicate with us live via Facebook during the show, or you can call in at 713-955-0561 with your questions. And also, if you are on the Blog Talk Radio, there's a little chat room where you can communicate with Al. So I'm monitoring Facebook, Al is monitoring the Blog Talk Radio show page, and you can call in. So there's all types of ways for you to connect with us, and we'd love to hear your questions and your comments, whether it be now or after the show. Any questions posted on the Facebook page, Al and I will respond to. So with that, I sort of want to hop into the first step, which some of you may be thinking, okay, more of that, more of that, more of that. But it goes along with self-love, but it's self-care. The first step to get out of stop being codependent is to start loving yourself and caring for yourself. So the other day I was talking to a client. she had told me, excuse me, she had told me, I can't go get my nails done or I can't go get my hair cut because my husband will yell at me. And I found that so very, very, very sad. And as I communicated with her, I was like, what can you do to show yourself for self-care? With self-care, we think eat right. And she said, well, I do exercise. But self-care doesn't have to cost money, especially not if you're in a controlling relationship where you cannot spend money. Self-care can be soaking in a hot bathtub with Epsom salt for 15 minutes every day. Self-care can be meditating every day. Self-care can be taking a walk out in nature. Self-care can be just reading an inspirational book for 10 or 15 minutes a day. There's so many ways to for self-care. What would you like to say about self-care, Mr. L?
You know what? Self-care is when you prioritize yourself, not in an egotistical standpoint, but in a sense of making yourself important enough that you take care of yourself, your overall well-being. Because if you keep putting everybody else first, then where do you land? You know, number 2, number 5, number 12, number 20, you have to take care of yourself so that you can take care of others. And so it is mandatory that you have self-care. And it is mandatory that you take care of yourself. If you're always putting out for everybody else, then you're going to get depleted. And that can cause depression. That can cause anxiety. That can cause a numerous things, you know, and even disease. If you're not taking care of yourself, who else is going to take care of you, you know? And then I know those people out there say, well, so-and-so is going to take care of me. In reality, you're supposed to take care of yourself, and then everything else will fall into place.
You know, a lot of people, especially in America, just think that we were based on being a Christian nation, and there's a lot of Christians, and they always fall back to the Bible, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I like to switch this around a little bit. Definitely, you want to treat other people the way you want them to treat you. But do you treat yourself the way you want other people to treat you?
And that's a good point, because how you treat yourself is how everybody else is going to see, and then that's how they're going to treat you. So if you don't have no self-respect for yourself, nobody's going to respect you. Or if you don't love yourself, nobody's going to love you. I mean, they'll love you to some degree, obviously, but if you're looking for something, if you desire to have something in life, you got to show it to yourself first so that everybody else will follow your lead and do exactly what you do for yourself. I want to touch on something here, Cindy, real quick, and it came to mind here because I was involved in a relationship. Like, what if you're in a codependent relationship, but that relationship exists in that manner because you perceive it to be codependent and not so much because the other person is that way? Here's an example. So let's say you're in a relationship and you're at your mother's home. And you're there for 25 minutes, and then you tell your mother, I got to go because so-and-so is waiting for me. And you get home, and so-and-so is just on the computer doing nothing. But in your mind, you think you got to do things a certain way or be here at a certain time. Or an example you just gave, you know, in regards to go get a pedicure or whatever you said, or a manicure. And you go home, and what you perceive to be true is not even a reality. But in your mind, you've convinced yourself that you're in that type of relationship, and when in reality, it's not even true for the other person. So how do you get out of that codependency?
I think in a way, it's all about how we perceive things that are being said, and it's something that I think we develop the habit into it. And I'm going back to my relationship with Earl. I don't think he started out, I mean, we started dating when we were 16. I don't think he started out controlling me. But I was in so much awe of him and thought that he knew everything. And so I was always looking to him for advice. And then if he was like, well, you don't look good in that, then I just took it to heart and said, okay, then I'm not going to wear it. So looking back, I can actually see how I became codependent, but more or less how I taught Earl to control me because he would say something and I would perceive it. It was like, if he said one thing, it was like it was gospel to me. So it in my mind, there was this little check mark in my mind. Don't ever do that again. Don't ever do that again. This makes him angry. This makes him sad. This makes him happy. And then whenever I became ill, it became even worse because I was actually physically dependent upon him. And it's very interesting being out of it and looking back at the whole process of it. So I think what you just described, reminds me of that is because we teach somebody that based on the way we're perceiving what they say or do. Like you said, you know, oh, we have to get home because so-and-so is waiting for me. But we're perceiving something that's not there, and so we are creating more of the codependent relationship.
Okay, but you threw something in there that I wanted to take out, controlling. So what if again, let's get deeper into this. What if there's no controlling factor? The person is just being himself or herself, and they're enjoying life, and they're not controlling the other person. But the other person feels I have to get home because so-and-so is waiting for me.
Because the controlling is a perception to an extent.
I understood that. So that's why, mm-hmm. And I get that. So I want to make sure we make that clear to the audience. I want to make sure that the person that's perceiving the situation is not in reality happening with the other person. I want to remove
exactly.
any blame or fault. So
yeah, and it may or may not be. It may or it may not be. For example, Mike, he jokes all the time. Mike is like the biggest jokester in the world. And he will tell me a joke sometimes and I'll laugh my head off. And he can say the same exact joke or something similar a week later and I'll just like get irritated. And he, at the beginning of our relationship, he would go, I'd never know, what I can say to you. And I'm like, well, just you do whatever feels right to you because you have no way of knowing my mood. You don't know if I have a headache, if I'm not feeling well, if I've if I had a bad day at work, if it's a day that reminds me of something that I just feel a little bit down. And this is where all the perception comes in. So if one time, and you're not meaning to be controlling, and we're going to go back to they're just sitting there, if I'm out with my mom and I come home and I tell my mom, hey, I have to, go home because Al's waiting for me. And, I'm going to change this. If I'm out with my mom and then I come home and you're like, Cindy, where was you? I was worried about you because I thought you were going to be home an hour ago. Then something in my mind's perceived, uh-oh, Al's waiting for me. So there's this subconscious idea planted in my head from my perception. So the next time I'm out with my mom, it's like, Mom, I have to go home because Al's waiting for me. So then I get home and you're watching TV and it's like, you wasn't worried about me at all this time. You were happy playing video games or watching TV or whatever you were doing. And this is how a lot of times we perceive it. We are we're basing what we're thinking on something that happened whenever it may or it may not be the same exact situation.
So there are two scenarios that, and there's probably more, but there's two blatant, obvious scenarios here that one is if you're in a codependent relationship, if the other person is controlling and you have to respond or react or do things because of this other person's way of thinking and doing. Or the second one is because your perception is, of the scenario, which is in reality not true. So there's two possibilities
exactly.
here, and I'm sure, and then obviously there could be more of codependency.
Typically, I do want to add this, and I do believe this to be true, and I know what you will think of this. Typically, if it's all a perception in your mind, you're either going to work it out and realize that it's a perception in your mind. Or the other going to feel, man, this part, yeah, I mean, like, and I'm going to go back to like you and I. Al could say, God, Cindy's so needy. she's always coming home. She's clinging on me. She's trying to make me happy. She tells me I almost feel like I'm walking on eggshells because she thinks that, you know, if I'm sad, she's going to be sad. If I'm angry, she's going to be sad. If I'm anything, she's going to be sad. And this is just too much work for me. So therefore, Cindy, it's just not going to work. Goodbye. See you later. Because if you are strong within yourself, that's what you're going to do. You're not going to remain in this relationship with me being so codependent on you because it's too much work for you. But if you have somebody who is a tendency to be a controller, such as Earl, they're going to fall into the role of controlling.
You know, as I was listening to you, and I'm going to go back to the scenario of, you know what, actually this applies to both scenarios. If your perception is of the relationship or if you're in a relationship where the other person is very controlling, you know what it comes down to here, as I was listening to you, is low self-esteem and low self-worth.
Exactly.
If your perception is, I have to get home because so-and-so is waiting for me, and in reality that's not really happening, you have low self-worth and low self-esteem. If your perception is, I have to take care of this other person because, you know, this is the way the person operates and blah, 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 blah. And again, it still comes down to low self-worth and low self-esteem. At some point, you have to acknowledge who you are and the importance of not only the importance of who you are, but the importance of what you contribute to the relationship. And once you understand that, then you become empowered.
Yeah, if you can hold on just a second, Al, because I think you're sort of going to our second step here. Because the second step is actually sort of just affirming, which is where, you know, you start because you do have this low self-esteem and no self-love. So it's affirmations. And with affirmations, you can realize that you're not responsible for somebody else's feelings. And also, if you ask yourself, if somebody says, if you loved me, you would have came home. If you loved me, you would have done this. Then who's being selfish? Is it you or is it them? Because they want you to change who you are to please them. And so remember that it could very well be them being selfish. But as far as affirmations is over, one of my favorite affirmations is to repeat all day long, over and over and over and over again, I am responsible for my feelings. I am responsible for my feelings. And the more you keep saying that you're responsible for your feelings, you'll realize that, as Eleanor Roosevelt said, no one can make me feel inferior without my permission. But just as you are responsible for your feelings and you keep repeating that, you're also subconsciously telling yourself that this other person is responsible. And I know that you have a couple affirmations, and I use them too, but I'm going to let you share them.
You know, one of the ones I use is in regards to being empowered is I am blessed abundance of empowerment. And because, in other words, I'm utilizing the word empowerment because I want to make sure that whatever experience I'm going through or whatever situation I'm in, that I'm empowered enough to go through it and to deal with it, which just allows me to trust myself that I can get through an experience. So then again, I am blessed abundance of empowerment. And I don't want to get into all the details why I phrase it that way, but try it because, again, when you talk to yourself, how you talk to yourself, as Cindy just said, you know, if you keep repeating something to yourself, eventually your subconscious mind buys into it. And eventually what happens is you start living in that manner because you keep telling yourself. And then life and the universe starts responding to you and say, well, Al keeps saying this is who he is, so it must be true, so let's support him. So, but you got to keep doing it because otherwise, your mind, two things are running on automatic. Your thoughts, unless you have the ability, you're some sort of master, and you can actually be in the moment all the time. But your thoughts are running on automatic. And second to that are your emotions. Your emotions, even though not many people talk about emotions, everybody talks about thoughts. But the second most critical thing is emotion. So however you're thinking is what's going to happen. But secondary is what however you're feeling is also going to happen.
And your feelings, it's really important to realize that whatever you continuously think, you're eventually going to feel. So if you're thinking it and you're saying it, even if at first it's like, I want to be responsible for my feelings, and you start saying, I am responsible for my feelings, the more you say it, and especially if you can add feeling to the statement, you're going to begin feeling it. That's where the fake it to make it comes in. Also, it's looking in the mirror, eye to eye, and just saying, I love you exactly as you are. I love and honor who you are and what you are. And something else that you could do, I don't go into the whole tapping sequence, but there's an emotional freedom technique where you go through tapping techniques to do something. But one of the things that I find, it's a very simple tapping technique, and some tappers might say this is crazy, but I know it's worked for a lot of people, is just simply tap your heart and keep tapping your heart, saying, I love and accept myself exactly as I am. I love and accept myself exactly as I am. Because whenever you can tap into that self-love and the self-responsibility that you're responsible for your feelings, and whoever you're in a relationship with is responsible for their feelings. Because if you think about it, and I always say this, especially with parents, you can really relate to this. Can you be sick enough to make your child healthy if your child's sick? If your child's crying, can you be sad enough to make your child stop crying? And so this is what we do with other people, is we think that if we change how we feel, that somehow it's going to affect the other person. And whenever we put it into perspective with the child, we know that we can't be sick enough to make our child healthy. We know that we cannot be sad enough to make our child happy. But it's the same way with any other relationship. You cannot be happy enough to make, you can't be sad enough to make somebody else happy. You cannot be, quote unquote, good enough to make somebody happy. And being codependent, you try to be good enough for the other person. And first of all, you have to be good enough for you. And to start believing that you're good enough for you is goes through the self-care and the affirmation. Thing is, a lot of people that are codependent need to learn how to exercise your no muscle. And this can be as simple as if somebody says, hey, do you want to go to Mexican for lunch? And you don't feel like eating Mexican? Just say, no, I prefer Italian. And it's really starting with these simple little no's, because codependent people, yes, yes, yes. They're the biggest yes people in the world. They're going to yes everybody to death because you're afraid to say no and you're afraid to exercise your no muscle. So the more you exercise it, the stronger and more confident you start becoming.
So what about the people out there that tell you that compromise is the way to be? But in your heart, you're saying, you know what, I really don't want Mexican. I really want Italian. Where does compromise fit in all this?
And what is compromise? Compromise is you give to, sometimes I you know, sometimes you give in, sometimes I give in. Okay? Where does compromise fit in is voicing your opinion. If you tell me, Al, let's go to Mexican, Cindy, but I really don't want Mexican. I have not voiced anything. But if you go, let's go to Mexican. I go, oh, I don't really feel like Mexican. I feel like Italian. And you go, well, you know, since just last week we went to Italian, and I'm just really not in the mood. Because, you know, how much do you not want Mexican? Is there something else you might want to have? Maybe we can go have American instead. Maybe we can go have Chinese instead. Or, you know, maybe I'll say, well, you know, American or Chinese really don't sound good. And, yeah, I mean, I was really in the mood for Italian. But you're right. Last week, you know, you came to an Italian restaurant with me, so I'll go have the Mexican with you today. This is compromise because we are actually discussing it. There's no compromise without discussion.
Agreed. And, you know, the common theme that I'm hearing through this whole show is, how do you want to be treated? You know, how do you want to be looked at? And in order to understand how you want to be treated and how you want to be looked at or how you want to be taken care of or et cetera, is how you treat yourself. You know, how you take care of yourself. How much do you respect yourself? How much do you love yourself? And going back to what Cindy said earlier in the show, how much self-care do you have for yourself? Because in every scenario that we've talked about here in the last 25 minutes, it all comes down to you, whether you perceive something to be true or not, or whether it's actually happening. It all comes down to how are you treating yourself? How much self-care do you have for yourself? How much love do you have for yourself? How much respect do you have for yourself? In reality, how much do you care about yourself? Because that's what everybody else—that's how everybody else is going to treat you. You know, how empowered are you so that others will look at you and say, "Cindy, you're empowered. You come from a state of being of knowing who you are and what you want out of life, and therefore you will get treated that way." But if you come across all wimpy, and not a real nonchalant, and you know what, I just go with the flow, and whatever happens, happens. And that's how life is going to treat you. Not just relationships, but life itself will treat you that way. So, and again, the theme that I've heard to this whole show is, how are you treating yourself? And here's the thing, when you understand how you're treating yourself.
I want to add something before we go, too. I have about
okay.
a minute.
Okay.
Go
ahead.
You want to finish what you're saying? Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine.
I just think it's super, super, super important. Is number one, if you are in a codependent relationship and you're not loving yourself like you want to, and you are trying to love yourself, be loving and compassionate with yourself during your own healing process. And I know that a lot of people that came from dysfunctional families, they suffered, you know, emotional, physical, or sexual abuse. You started with your defense mechanisms as a child. And the defense mechanisms as a child typically is what winds up, or even as a, you know, as maybe a teenager or a young adult, something happened where you started getting this defense mechanism that you had to care for everybody else and that you didn't matter. And this was a survival mode. So as you're transitioning from being codependent into being strong and loving yourself, be loving and compassionate with yourself just as you would somebody else. Because I know that you're an amazing person, and you probably have tons of friends and family that think you're an amazing person and love you totally. So it's hard for you because you're still in this protection mode that you developed sometime in your lifetime. And with that, if you can journal to try to figure that out, you can get a coach. Either, you know, if you want to, you could reach out to Al or I. We both help people learn to love themselves again, because there's so many techniques that you can use to do it. And whenever you have support and somebody cheering you on, sometimes that's, you know, even more. So I do want to say, you know, don't think, oh, I can never do this, because you can do it. I know tons of people who have really experienced horrific, what some people would call horrific lives. My personal life is, some people would say, was horrific, and I have overcame this, and I have learned to love myself, and believe me, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So I do want you to remember to love and be compassionate with yourself.
And I agree with Cindy. One of the most easy things to do, no, I don't know if it's easy, simple things to do, and it may not be easy because you're pouring your heart out, is to journal. And eventually what will happen by journaling, you'll realize at some point that, hey, you know what, I can use this support, I can use a mentor, I can use a coach, I can use somebody I could talk to. So, ladies and gentlemen, Cindy Holbrook, the Compassionate Divorce Coach of CoachingForDivorceWomen.com, phenomenal co-host. Have you had enough of what you're going through? Contact me and let's rewrite your story from your existing pain to purpose that allows you to have the life you truly desire. My email address is al.diazforlove@gmail.com. And remember, every Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, join us and listen to what toxic relationships is all about. Thank you all for joining us. And remember that everything in our past, present, and future is for our best and highest good. Wherever you're at, have a great day or wonderful evening. Cindy, you're phenomenal. Thank you for being you.
And thank you for being you. And thank you for being you to all of our audience. And big love to you all. And happy
Take
Mother's
care.
Day
have
to the moms
day.
Out there.
Oh, yeah. Happy Mother's Day. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.